Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to Small and Microcap News on Thursday, the 27th of November, 2025. Of course, budget, well, that's done. Typical Labour budget, wasn't it? Pretty much raise taxes, spend on welfare, spend more, tax more, pretty much. Do you know what one word that was conspicuously missing or absent from Robert Reeves's budget? And I do find it very robotic. Listen to, you know, lots of interviews with her. And it reminds me of almost ChatGPT or Gemini. Do you know what? I've just started messing around with voice on these AI sort of apps. It is mad. There's people suffering with delusion now because they believe they're talking to real people. And you can choose the voice you want. So it could be, you know, a bubbly American lady or a middle-class English woman or whatever, or a man. It's up to you. But there are people suffering from delusions. And I was listening to Diary of a CEO. I can't think of the guy that was on there. Let me just think. He was one of the guys that, you know, had a campaign at social media years back. Remember that film? Tristan Harris is the guy who was talking to Stephen Bartlett. And he was saying, we are headed towards, if we're not careful, you know, the wiping out of humankind. Especially when you get to artificial general intelligence. And that's, of course, when these AI models become as intelligent as humans. And it struck me. You know, we've created lots of technologies throughout the past, humans, and we're always in control of them. Now, if we get to artificial general intelligence, we'll probably no longer be in control of them, which is worrying because they can learn for themselves and do things themselves. They don't need humans. And so we're at a worrying point, and they're saying, you know, how far are we away from artificial general intelligence? Between 2 and 10 years, they reckon. So it's quite worrying. But anyway, Rachel Reeves reminded me, because you can get now the models who chat with you on these apps are more human-like and react to the question better than Rachel Reeves, because they've got this patter they always come out with. You know, regardless of what you ask them, they give you an answer that they've already got scripted in their head. Anyway, there was a word she didn't mention that she'd been hammering on about, you know, since she came to power, pretty much. In the first 12 months, all she went on about. Growth. There was nothing about growth in the budget, was there? Absolutely nothing. It's almost they're resigned to the fact they can't get growth. So what they do? Oh, just tax and spend, as we normally do. And there's a good reason for this. You know, apart from this year, the OBR's upgraded growth this year from 1% to 1.5%. From 2026 to 2030, all growth has been downgraded. Downgraded. And they always blame, you know, this problem, other people. When there's a bit of growth, she takes the credit. And then when there's problems, it blames it on Brexit, pandemic, whatever, conservatives. So for 25, apparently GDP growth is it's going to be 1%. It was 1%. It's now upgraded to 1.5. For 2026, it was 1.9%, downgraded to 1.4. 2027 is 1.8%, downgraded to 1.5. 2028, 1.7%, now downgraded to 1.5. And 2029, 1.8%. down to 1.5, and also 2030, also 1.5. So what the 1.5? First of all, I don't believe that. It just seems that they're just picking, and let's be honest, the OBR are the most optimistic of all the economists, the consensus. They're obviously way above consensus on most of their forecasts anyway. Meanwhile, so growth is coming down, but hopefully we achieve that growth. So for 2025 now, it was expected to be 117.7 billion. It's now 138.3 billion. For 2026, it is coming down, but the forecasts are gone up. So it was expected to be for 26, 97.2 billion, but it's now expected to be 112.1 billion. And then in 2028, it starts to come down below estimates. So extra spending up to 2030 will be 32.1 billion. 5 billion will go in local government, 5 billion will go in debt interest, and 16 billion will go on welfare spending. And that's the problem, isn't it? They haven't got the support within the Labour Party, so they've had to sort of, you know, give some policies towards the backbenchers and all that stuff, like 3.5 billion for the childcare cap, or removing that childcare cap. So 8 billion, right, of that spend is coming from tax threshold freeze. 4.7 billion is coming from pension salary sacrifice. So those are working people, pretty much, this is never tax, working people who pay more tax or from their pension, and also I don't know what's happening there is basically the welfare increase is being funded by working people. You know, productivity is not doing well, of course, in this country, and you understand why, because the welfare state is being bloated, and working people are paying for it. So that's why, you know, you're shifting productivity from working people to non-working people. But do you know what I thought was stupid? Do you know how much is coming from this mansion tax? If you have a house in London above 2 million, or anywhere in the country, but in London, 2 million is not a mansion. Honestly, flats in London are going for like half a million, a million quid. So 2 million is not a mansion. By the way, do you know how much they're going to raise? So we're talking in the reams of billions here, the spending, and they're raising on tax. How much are they going to raise from the mansion tax? 400 million. What is the point of that? What is the point? It's an anti-growth policy. You know that property ladder, the housing ladder there, the chain of houses need to be sold. People need to sell at the top to move the whole thing. You know, it moves. Once you start gumming that up or, you know, putting something sticky in the way, a policy of procedures in the way of it, or regulation, it just stops it. The housing market is one of the best, you know, indicators for economic growth in this country. Once the housing market starts moving, it has a multiplier effect across the entire economy. It raises no money. It's just a spiteful tax, I thought that was. I mean, you probably find the true billionaires, they won't be affected by that. But you will have old people who've lived in London for years and years, or in the southeast for years and years and years, and you know, they've worked hard all their lives. All of a sudden, their house is worth 2 million. They've got to pay this money, 2.5 grand, 7.5 grand, whatever it is. This tax is basically, it typifies what Labour are about. It's born of the politics of envy from lefty, bitter, jealous Labour politicians to try and take money off the wealthy because they can. It's not an economic policy. It's a bitter, envious, spiteful policy from these insecure, jealous, lefty loonies trying to take money off successful people because they envy their wealth. It's nothing more than that. You do not grow a successful economy by taxing successful people out of spite and jealousy. We should champion success. Should champion wealth creators, because it does filter down. They employ people, they pay more tax than anyone else, way more tax. Like I said, the top 10% of earners, the top 10% pay over 60% of all tax in the UK, the top 10%. But they only earn 34% of the entire revenue of the UK, but they pay 60%. So when they say the broader shoulders, so, you know, take the weight a little bit. They more than take the weight. When you consider the bottom 50% pay less than 10%, top 10% pay more than 60%, they are. How much more do you want to tax them? I saw that dickhead, what's his name from Liverpool, MP, saying we should tax billionaires more and more. What he doesn't understand, you are taxing them. There's loads of money coming from them, but they are moving out. In fact, there was net migration numbers out today showing people are leaving the country. All you're going to do is annoy these people who are mobile. They'll leave and take their tax revenue with them. They'll pay it somewhere else. I can't believe how stupid these people are. If you want a really robust system, you attract these wealthy people because they pay lots and lots of tax. You get rid of them, it's just part of the debt, you get less tax take. I don't understand. So it comes down to really lots of, not all Labour, of course, but lots of Labour politicians just hate wealthy people. If that's the case, you shouldn't be in charge, because if you want to improve the economy of the UK, you shouldn't be hating. You should look at it from a strictly clinical economic viewpoint. So we need wealthy people in this country because they pay lots of tax. Full stop. Let's attract more wealthy people because they pay more tax. And we need that tax for the rest of society. So we've come to the point now where apparently Rachel Reeves has increased taxes 8 times more than she said she would. It's the highest tax burden ever at 38.2%. Increase in taxes by more than 70 billion since she came to power. The welfare state will increase by, it'll increase by 400 billion by 2029. And do you know what's annoying? The biggest rise in taxation in recent times by this parliament, I think this is the 1970s, the biggest rise in taxation, huh? And they continue to lie about it, saying, you know, oh, it's what we said in the manifesto, wouldn't raise tax on working people. This is what they said. The Conservatives have raised tax burden to a 70-year high. That's what they said in their manifesto. That's not the case anymore, because they've just broken that record. We will ensure taxes on working people are kept as low as possible. Labour will not increase taxes on working people, which is why we will not increase national insurance, the basic, higher, or additional rates of income tax or VAT. That's a sneaky way of putting it, isn't it? So people are paying more tax. They will be paying more tax if they earn a little bit of a pay increase. Again, it's almost punishing people who've had a pay increase. You go into another tax bracket then, you get charged for it. Apparently by 2030, more than 10 million people will be dragged into higher rates of income tax compared to 2023. But they keep saying, oh, we won't raise the tax for working people. It's semantics. It's very sneaky, very slimy the way they're saying, the way they've worded it. Because people are paying more tax. They will be paying more tax, you know, if you get a pay increase, essentially. Do you know what I think? Also, why are politicians allowed to say one thing in the manifesto which gets them voted in, then not fulfil these promises, which is the very reason they are in power? This does not happen in any other sector. If I had a contract with a builder, for example, to build a house for me, and I wanted a specific design and all that stuff, and the builder started and said, yeah, that's fine, I can do that. And they started and they changed a lot of the details, design, started building to a different sort of design, and said, oh, yeah, we agreed to that. We can't do it. No, we can't do it. They would be liable, wouldn't they? I think the Prime Minister, the Chancellor, should be liable. It's a breach of contract with a vote in public. They got to power on those promises, and now they're not sticking to them. And they say, well, we didn't actually say that. Anyway, but having said all that, so lots of tax going up, lots of spend. What does it mean for the markets? Because investors, that's what we care about. And if you look at the bond yield yesterday, it dropped a bit, which is quite good. And when I say the markets, I do mean the bond markets, because that informs the equity markets, okay? And the bond markets liked it for two reasons, pretty much. Number one, there was nothing obviously inflationary within it. So they did a freeze on train fares and reduction in energy costs, coupled with a soft labour market, will help bring down sort of inflation, wages, all that stuff, even though they did do a wage increase the day before. Now, because of the tax threshold freeze, she's increased her headroom from about 9 billion to about 22 billion, meaning she will not have to borrow more than forecast, hopefully, meaning she will not have to issue more bonds than expected. If she did have to do this, it would push the bond prices down, move yields up, and the cost of government more to service the debt, meaning less money for the government to spend day to day, and so there's a chance she won't have to raise any more taxes again or issue more bonds. Therefore, if inflation drops, according to the Bank of England's forecasts, and more debt does not have to be issued, bond prices can rise, meaning yields fall, inflation coming down means the Bank of England can reduce interest rates. And this is the biggest mover of the economy and the market. By the way, that wasn't the case in the last budget. When she raised national insurance on employers, employers had no choice to put, you know, they'd squeeze margins anyway, some of them making a loss, had no choice to put prices up. And of course, that's very inflationary. She sort of realised this a little bit. She's probably very, and the Bank of England were due to reduce interest rates until she did that in the last budget. So she put a spanner in the works there. Anyway, if they come down, if interest rates come down, you know, people generally have more disposable income to spend as mortgages become more affordable for current homeowners. And people looking to buy a house, of course, we get a better mortgage deal. Borrowing becomes cheaper across the board too, whether you're going for a car or finance or anything like that. Also, companies with debt have less to pay in interest, meaning more money to invest. Also, companies are more likely to expand using debt as it's more affordable. Plus, with lower interest rates, money market funds, bank saving accounts become less attractive and the stock market becomes more attractive, therefore money inflow. So interest rates, you know, are the biggest move of the market. So whilst Labour have lied, they've raised taxes massively, announced a spiteful, envious mansion tax, expanded their welfare state and have not achieved growth, they have, it seems for now, satisfied the bond market, which should help bring down interest rates. This should help economic activity and boost growth. But this growth has not come about due to growth policies. Like I said, they haven't mentioned them, pretty much. They haven't mentioned growth. In fact, it could be argued that it has largely come about due to lack of wage growth, which is linked to a weakening jobs market. Therefore, if growth happens, it's down to Labour's failed policy, not policy success in the growth area. They've talked about growth, they've not achieved it. But like I said, interest rates are what to look out for. I think the MPC next meeting is, let's have a look, Bank of England, MPC, yeah, I think it's the 16th. The 16th of thing, I think. Interest rates, let's yeah, 16th, Thursday the 16th of December is the next meeting, and they're largely expected to reduce interest rates by 0.25%, which will help, of course. Everything helps. Coming down in the market. Sorry. Anyway, okay. Let's have a look at it's a quick market. Sorry, I'm banging off in there, but it was a lot in the budget and it wound me up a little bit. But at least the bond market wasn't wobbled. Okay, markets. FTSE 100. It's flat. 9693. Stocks 600 in Europe. Up 0.14% to 575. The American markets are closed, of course, because it's Thanksgiving. They get too big, don't they? Sort of two massive sort of festivities within a month. To be honest, I eat enough over Christmas. I mean, Thanksgiving and Christmas. Maybe that's why Americans, you know, they've got a problem with obesity there because they have two massive festivals, you know, that centre around food within a month, don't they? A small cap, it's rallying. That's good, actually. I mean, small caps and micro caps will rally strongly on interest rates coming down. But small cap up 0.6%, 7342, 4250 up almost 1%, 22,091. What else we got? The FTSE All World Index, well, it's flat pretty much, 659. And the AIM All Share up 0.77%, so 0.75%, pretty much, to 748. Commodities, Brent crude, pretty much flat, $63.2 a barrel. Well, so gold is down a third of 1%, $4,188 an ounce. Copper, $5.1 a pound. Anything else? Bitcoin, it has bounced a nice little bit here, Bitcoin. It's up 1% to 91,393. Of course, that's a nice, that's a V-shaped bounce. It can do that, though, Bitcoin. It doesn't, you know, normal stocks have a bottoming process, so almost like a Nike tick, you know, comes down. Down, rolls back up smoothly. But Bitcoin can have these aggressive V-shaped rallies. Generally in stocks and indices, V-shaped rallies, the indices can do it. I mean, the S&P can do it for so long. But generally stocks, you know, a V-shaped rally isn't that sustainable. It has to come back and maybe make a higher low. But Bitcoin can do that because, of course, well, it's like indices on steroids, isn't it? Dollar index is pretty much flat. Dollar's not going to be here. So yesterday, bond yields are down. They are up a trifle today. The two-year government bond yield is at 3.758. It's up 0.6%. The 10-year is up 0.75%, 4.45. And the 30-year is up 0.13% to 5.2. A pound value, €1.14. which is climbing a bit against the euro. And it's $1.32 a pound will buy you in America. What else we got here? Oh, I've lost my website here. Oh, there we are. I've lost the tab. Okay, let's look at the Macrocap database. In fact, there's nothing worth looking at today. There's ActiveOps, which, yeah, well, look at that. Altitude Group, wouldn't touch Altitude Group. They're struggling a little bit. Begbie's Trainers, another sort of acquisition, a bit more significant, this one. But let's look at ActiveOps, first and foremost. It's a software-as-a-service business dedicated to helping organizations create more value from their service operations. ActiveOps decision intelligence software are specifically designed to support leaders with the vast number of decisions they make in running their operations. Okay, I don't know what they actually do, though. Richard Jeffrey, CEO, holds about 13% of the stock. At $2.37 a share. In fact, where did it go today? Because this is very highly priced. Went up and down a little bit. Did it go up 1.24%? Okay, let's scroll down there. So at $2.37 a share, it's 170 million market cap, 148 million enterprise value, so got a nice bit of cash there. In fact, that's come down now, looking at that. It's 153, so they got 13 million of net cash. That's down from 20 million year end. But here's the results of ActiveOps. This is H1 2026. Revenue up 45%. Very good growth. To 20.8 million. Net loss of 937K versus a net profit of 370K. Cash, net cash down 1% to 13.3 million. Free cash outflow of 7.3 million versus outflow of 3 million last year. Good top line growth, but net loss for H1 and cash outflow. So this was upgraded recently. Brokers upgraded their numbers and target price 355 from 220 based on 4x calendar year 2026 EV sales. I can't help but think that the target price has been upgraded just because the share price has risen beyond the last target price rather than based on fundamental valuations. That does happen. I've seen it. I've seen, you know, brokers give a target, the company all of a sudden rises and they just up their target. And yet the figures haven't changed. Well, why are you up in the target price? It's based on, you know, valuations and fundamentals. The company states they are well-positioned for a strong second half with continued momentum, expect to deliver full-year results in line with recently upgraded market expectations. And they are, for 26, 39% top-line growth to 42.2 million, net profit of 500K, puts them on a PE of 338. Even for 27, top line growth 12%, so it slows a little bit. But bottom line growth of 160% to 1.3 million puts them on a PE of 130. Even for 2028, 51 million top line, 8% growth there, and 3.3 million net profit up 154%, but still a PE of 51. So they have got some decent growth there in the next couple of years, but a PE of 50 for 2028. Seems like the potential is fully priced in here. The broker uses, like I said, 4x EV sales, but on a PE, it's very lofty. Maybe it's, you know, it's the wrong metric, PE. Well, I don't. If you look at PEs, you'd never buy an overvalued share, put it that way. I can't help think this has been boosted by, you know, a bit of AI hype around it, and I think it's fully priced in. I can't see this going any higher based on those numbers and that sort of profit level. It seems a very high valuation. There again, you know, it could be, well, they're based on sales, not profits. Begbie's Trainer, Beg. So a business recovery, financial advisory and property services consultancy provides a range of services, including corporate and personal insolvency, corporate finance, financial advisory, valuations, transactional services and property consultancy, planning and management. Good, there's a lot, doesn't it? So at 110 a share, 175 million market cap, 174 million enterprise value. They acquired a company, what was it? Where was the acquisition here? Acquisition is two in a day. Yeah, they did one on the 25th, one on the 26th. But this one was more significant. The, It has acquired Kirkby Diamond LLP and Kirkby Diamond Property Management for up to $8.25 million. They will integrate with Edison's, the group's real estate advisory and transactional services division. So they employ... So let's look. This company, Kirkby, did for 2025, $6.2 million in top line and normalised pre-tax profit of $1.1. So that seems all right, doesn't it, on a multiple there? Trading is projected to remain at this level in the current financial year. The consolidated net assets are $1.4 million. Okay. But I think it's worth watching if you look at this. They haven't upgraded the figures here, but they did say broker will update forecasts on the release of their H1 results on the 9th of December. So what were we, 10 days away from that? No, more than that, aren't we? 12 days? But yeah, I think Begbies, if you look at it, they've got mid-single-digit growth for the next 3 years. They've got double-digit net profit growth for the next 3 years, but on a PE of 18 for 26, 12 for 27, and 10 for 28. So three consecutive years of growth. So I think they are in a bit of a range at the moment. But I think, you know, this could be upgraded, of course. If that company's earning, you're adding extra, what, a million of profit and 6 million top line. So, yeah, that would improve that. So worth a watch, I think, Begbies Trainer. I'll do one more, if it's okay with you. Cakebox. This is half-year results. Cakebox Seedbox is a franchise retailer and manufacturer of cakes with growing store base across the UK. The first concept store opened in East London in 2008. The business expanded to a franchise estate of 91 stores by 2018 when it was listed at AIM. So at £2.06 a share, they are 90 million market cap, 99 million enterprise value. And these were half-year results, like I said. And a lot of good news in here, I thought. I do own a few Cakebox shares, by the way, just to let you know. So I may sound a bit biased. So, you know, take it with a pinch of salt, everything they say. But revenue up 54% to 28.8 million. Net profit down 7% to 1.9. This is as a result of an acquisition, by the way. A net debt of 11.6 million versus net cash last year. Free cash flow of 1.5 million, up 46%. And I think the good results here. Significant organic growth as Cakebox revenues increased by 18.9% to 22.3 million. Like-for-like sales growth of 6.3% compared to the equivalent period last year. 9 new Cakebox stores were opened during the period, with another 4 opened post-period end. 2 new Ambala franchisee-owned stores opened. That's the acquisition they made earlier in the year. Bring the total number of Ambala stores to 24. Online sales increased by 25.9% year-on-year, with 134K new customers online. Net profit decreased due to acquisition of Ambala Foods. This is temporary. They say H2, this is what they say the company, FY26 revenues and profits are expected to be higher than in H1 26, in line with the group's normal seasonal trading pattern, resulting from a strong point in trading second half. Important celebration events to come. I think it's Eid and Diwali will be in this period, so that's big for, of course, Ambala Foods. New store openings and the continued digital growth. The company is confident of hitting full-year expectations. They say, looking ahead, the momentum in the first half has continued into the second half of the year, and we are on track to deliver full-year performance in line with our expectations, despite the consumer environment remaining challenging. They do pay, yeah, about a 5% dividend as well. So, but the share price didn't move that much. But if you look at the forecast here, they're expected to deliver double-digit revenue and growth across, and net profit growth across 3 years. They're on a PE of 14, going down to a PE of 11 from 26 to 28. And that seems like good value to me for that type of growth. So 46% this year, top line. Next year, 12%. The year after that, 10%. Net profit growth of 49% for 26, 15% for 27, and 16% net profit growth for 28. And like I say, PE 14, 12, 10. So I think it's a company worth looking at, to be honest. I say I'm biased because I own some. So do your own research at sharepickers.com. Thanks for listening. Don't forget, if you want to get 40% off, ending probably soon at the end of this year, that's £2.88 a week. That's all it is. Don't forget, time shoots by. Take advantage now before the end of the year and you miss out. But if you could, go to there, to the website, and that's the price. Well, it's less than the price of a pie from the chip shop. There we are. One feeds your mind, one feeds your belly. Take your pick. Well, you can do both if you want, let's be honest. Thanks for listening. Speak to you tomorrow. Muchos apreciados.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints. Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right Rug.